This is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Steve Brooks, and today I'm talking with Suvish Viswanathan, currently Head of Marketing UK and Europe at Zoho. Welcome to the podcast, Suvish. Could you tell the listeners a bit about your role and background? I know that you started your career in a similar role to mine as a software engineer, and I'm just intrigued what led you to marketing.
First of all, thank you, Steve, for having me here. I think it's a great platform. I started my career as a software engineer right after my engineering. I worked in the company for about a couple of years, developing a BI platform, interestingly, then joined Zoho as a product marketeer. I think when I was in my first company, I met with a couple of quite inspiring marketing leaders. It was a Japanese firm, and they inspired me to learn more marketing. And I got an opportunity at Zoho. Then one thing led to the other. And here we are, 15 years later.
We all have career changes, but not necessarily that early on.
Yes.
Today, we're going to discuss some of the key trends shaping marketing technology today and its influence on marketing. One of the things I noticed, according to 24 global study that evaluates the state of marketing technology from MarTech, there are over 14,100 MarTech solutions available for industry professionals last year. Before the pandemic, that number was still over 7,000, which is more than doubling in 5 years. With so much choice, what should an ideal MarTech stack look like?
That's a good starting point to the discussion, Steve. I have been following this growth now for a few years. I could see that every year the graph just keeps shrinking to add more and more logos. And like you said, it's about 14,000 last year. If you look at the marketing department itself, I am part of the department, so I can see different requests coming in from various other business functions. And so the operational requirements from marketing just keeps expanding. You know, got to build website, you got to have interactions with the customers, the whole backend automation around it, connection with multiple tools, et cetera, et cetera. And that gives the opportunity in the market to build tool for everything that's being worked upon within a marketing function. So there's been an ongoing debate for several years now whether one should go after a best of breed solution. For example, you want an email marketing tool, get an ESP tool. You want an analytics tool, get that. An all-in-one package. That debate has been going on forever since I remember. When it comes to your question on what is the ideal stack, I don't think there is an ideal stack. The stack depends upon what the business needs are, where the customers are for the business, what are the different channels you should have, what are the different platform one should focus on. And then you build a stack that could not only support the requirements of the business today, but also for the future. How can we add more channels as and when it comes into the market? It depends upon the flexibility of the stack that you're building. And then you get to the ideal stack that a business would need. That's how I think one should plan their stack strategy.
If we go back a few decades, marketing was all about the creative, the art. Data has become increasingly more important. So marketing is a lot more data driven. Why is that so important now? And what is the difference between good and bad data?
Once you have established the fundamental requirements for your marketing stack, then it is time for the team to consider how it can become a more insight driven function. And that's where the data comes in. Today, if you look at with all the data coming in from multiple sources, there's never been a more pressing time for marketing functions to create some competitive advantage through the data the business is generating. So when you look at good data, there is, or bad data, when you have the data that has quality, accuracy, it has usefulness in driving effective decision making or making the plans for the business, then those are the data sets that are needed for the business. Let's take an example of CRM. Most of the businesses today have some kind of CRM platform as a part of the day-to-day operations. We also see there's a lot of junk data getting into the CRM. You have a bad input and you get a bad output. When you look at CRM data, you have things like there are customer information, but then maybe the data is not correctly formatted, whether it's about their name, address, phone numbers, all these basic customer information that are needed. And when you have these junk sets of data going into the foundational system like a CRM or a CDP or a marketing automation tool, then everything else from there goes in the downward direction. The marketing success or the business success would depend upon the quality of the data that one has. And now we have several tools. Decades earlier, we always had some of the tools to cleanse the data, but now you have more automated tools out there in the market, which ensures that your data preparation, the cleansing of data happens before the data goes into the foundational business apps like a CRM or a marketing automation tool. Coming back to the question on what is good data, bad data, data that can provide information, insights to the business is what should be considered as the data that can further go into analysis. Otherwise, it's junk in, junk out.
A couple of points on that. How do you determine what is useful data?
It depends upon the business function that you are in. Take example of our business. When we have to, let's say, talk to our customers, we have a huge customer base across the world. We need the sales team or the other support function. They need information about the customer so that they can provide optimum support. For example, the right email address, the right phone numbers, or information about their business, etc. Now, these are basic sets of data that are required to provide support to the customers. Now, this data also goes further into the analytics tool to give some sort of prediction. You have these many customers in these states or in these industries. So why don't we look at a particular campaign for those verticals? Because this is where your growth would come in. Now, imagine if you don't have these data in the most accurate manner in CRM or whatever your foundational PA software is, then you won't get those insights. So there are multiple repercussions of having a bad data in your platform because you are never able to make that insight-driven decision, which will further have the first-order, second-order effect in your financial performance, customer satisfaction, your overall operational efficiency of the department, etc. Good news is we have now some tools in the market which can help you at least to get better sense of the data before it goes into the system.
When you say ingest data into the system, surely data is living. So even in a CRM, data is living. So how do you ensure your data's up to date? Because I know you said quality, accuracy and usefulness, but accuracy is not just a point in time. Data is continually evolving, but it may not be continually evolving within your system. So how do you ensure it does continually update?
There are different processes in place. Different organizations follow different processes. What I have seen at least is as a functional team, as a customer-facing team or a market-facing team, one is constantly engaging with the data through multiple tools or through interactions. And as and when you see that there is a change, for example, a customer has changed their address or they have expanded into multiple verticals, then keep updating the data. It could be manual, and sometimes it can also be driven by APIs, connecting it with other sources to help you stay updated. When you talk about this stage, it depends, again, back to the first topic, on the marketing stack you have. Sometimes your marketing stack is so rigid that you're not able to update certain things at the end user level. You have to contact the sales admin or whoever the IT administrator is to just have some updation process. This is where one has to draw the blueprint of marketing stack that is flexible, at the same time has all the checks and balances in place to ensure that you're not ripping and replacing a stack every 3 years.
Personalization in marketing has been around for several years. There's a new term emerging, hyper-personalization. What's your understanding of it and why is it so important?
There's been some personalization happening in the market for decades. So earlier, it was very manual process. Your salesperson would remember your birthdays and would send a nice birthday greeting to your home address. Today, it is a lot more data-driven. The main challenge that we are seeing today in terms of why there is so much improvement at the platform level is the challenges have also evolved. When you look at the consumer behavior in the last 5 to 10 years, it has rapidly evolved. The competition has become smarter, has become tougher, and the access to data and availability of data itself has also changed. When you combine these two, three evolving traits, you see that there is a need for your business and your platform to understand the customer requirements and to provide the right solution, products, or whatever you are into at the right time. So there is hyper-personalization is more need of the hour to stay ahead of the curve for businesses with the new technologies, especially with the last couple of years, the data and the analysis that is being done on the data using AI, etc. There is a lot more ability for the businesses to sift through the vast amount of information in real time and provide a very insight-driven recommendations to the customers. Now, we can take an example of we all use Amazon or Netflix. They have excellent recommendation engines working at the back end because you have so much of data that these websites would generate in the back end. They have been successfully able to segment those data and provide real-time recommendations. So customer segmentation was 5 years ago. That was the in thing. Now, with the segmentation, what do? You personalize the offering. I was reading the stats somewhere. They mentioned that when you watch Netflix, you have these recommendations. Apparently, about 80% of Netflix viewers, they rely on recommendations now, and only 20% of them search for content. This is the power of when you do it right, then it can really add to the customer experience that you want to offer to your viewers or to your users. So this is very important development that has happened, obviously, in the retail world, B2C world, and slowly it is coming into the B2B world as well. One caveat here is how much of personalization, what is the threshold level where we are not crossing the boundary of privacy here, which is another topic to discuss, but that's why it is important. If hyper-personalization helps you to have better customer experience, helps the business to grow and also provide the more solution-led or more consultative approach to selling what is actually needed by the customer.
On that privacy, just briefly, there's the PII issue in terms of organization having too much data, which is not necessarily legal. But also, is there a point where you can almost become too personalized as a marketer and actually make your consumer feel uncomfortable by the recommendations you're pushing onto them?
It is the responsibility of the brand to ensure we don't cross the limit. Because at the end of the day, there is certain sets of data that a consumer, a customer is comfortable sharing. What did I purchase? What am I browsing, etc.? But beyond a certain level, this can lead to questions like, how did you even know this thing? That's where brands have to be very careful before, put profits before everything else. Then it can be a bit creepy.
Data-driven marketing is kind of the science of marketing. It feels like that is on the upward curve still. Where does that leave the art of marketing? Is it being forgotten? Where do firms put in the art side of marketing?
I think it's always there. At the end of the day, whether data comes after we have done certain campaigns or when we decide to do a certain campaign, for example, but what we do for the campaign is still the art. What messaging you want to put, what copy you want to have, what should be there on your video, all of that is, or the positioning of it, the data can tell you or can give you some direction. And it can also help you probably now with AI, etc., make the right copy or make the right images, etc. But the art of marketing then would be to connecting these pieces together to really make the final product, which at the end consumers have to like if you have to be a successful campaigner or marketeer.
One of the big topics over the last couple of years I've seen is around cookies and first party and third party data. Google originally said they're going to deprecate them, delayed it, and in July revealed they're moving to a private sandbox environment. what is happening to cookies, and what do you see happening both to them and how marketers are going to have to adjust in the future?
This whole cookie debate started about maybe 5-6 years ago, especially, and it gained traction with GDPR getting rolled out in the EU, and we have seen similar regulations coming in various parts of the world, in Australia, in California, in South Africa, India has got something as well. It is all coming back to the previous point, how much of data you need to serve the needs of the customer and what do you do with the rest of the data, or should you even collect those data points? Cookie and some of the other companies, browsers, for example, the Firefox, Safari, they came up with their own regulations to ensure they don't have third-party cookies while browsing. Google has been trying that since 2019, 2020. I think we all have to be prepared as a marketeer for a cookie-less future. There are repercussions of it, especially if you are into digital marketing, if you have to put out campaigns, then you need to measure the performance of the campaign. Having no cookies on your website or on your campaign pages can have negative impact on measuring and improving your campaign. That's where there are some new approaches available in the last few years where you can still anonymize and gather the data that is needed for you to improve the campaign performance. And like you said, Google has come up with their private sandbox option since last couple of years. They've been attempting to roll it out as well. And some of the other players are also doing their bits. When you look at the whole cookie thing, there's been a lot of emphasis, because there could be this cookie-less future, emphasis on collecting first-party data. That's where most of the marketing teams are going after. It allows you to build that connection with the user or customer, allows you to build trust with them because they know that their data is not being collected without their consent. For example, when GDPR came into existence back in 2018, a year later or so, if I remember it right, we at Zoho got rid of all third-party cookies from our websites. And our websites generate quite a lot of traffic across the globe. The decision was that, hey, there is a regulation in place, although it doesn't ask you to completely get rid of third-party cookies. But let's take a stand, because if we want our customers, our visitors, to really connect with us and to learn about our products or the services that we offer, then they can provide us data. So instead of that push strategy, let's do that pull one. So if the customer is interested to know more about Zoho, then they will give their data and we'll connect with them. And guess what? It has not had any negative impact on the business. Yes, sometimes when we are launching campaigns, we are in dark because we don't know where the customer has come from or where the user has come from. You can't then improve the performance, but then you take certain North Star metrics and then you work backwards. If this is the metrics for the campaign to be successful, then how are we doing? What do we need to do to improve that particular metrics? So there are workarounds. There is also some server-side tagging thing, which is what private sandboxes from Google, which also helps in ensuring that you're collecting anonymized data, and purpose of it is just to improve the experience the user will have while they are interacting with your campaign pages or your websites, etc.
We've mentioned a few times AI. It's obviously evolving rapidly, especially over the last 2 years. AI has been around for quite a long time, actually, but it's the last 2 years we've seen a huge impact in marketing as well. What are the different use cases you're seeing and what's emerging on AI at the moment?
It's evolving. It's evolving rapidly. I am following a few websites to just keep myself updated because there's so much happening. Like your other functions in business, even the marketing teams, they're being driven to apply AI in marketing. So it is like, use it for something, whatever you think you can. There's video generation, copywriting, content generation, analytics, etc., etc. There is a hidden diamond out there, so why don't you just go and find out, kind of a mentality right now, which is not bad, which is what helps the teams to then really search for those use cases and see if it really works. And the good news is there are a lot of things in marketing and sales that can be automated, that can, with the automation, comes better decision making, better data that can be then further analyzed and predicted, recommended, etc. If you take any activity that marketing or the sales rep spend time doing, for example, if it's creating content, writing emails, building campaigns, calling the prospects, etc., etc., you see there is a definite use case, a genuine use case where AI can boost these activities. So we are seeing a growing trend in terms of, for example, doing the market research. We are seeing when you're using an AI-enabled platform, you're able to get to the end result much faster than what you were doing otherwise. When you do these research, it's not just for market. A salesperson, as SDR person, when she's trying to call, you need to have some research done on the company before calling. These AI-generated platforms or AI platforms can help you get to the most accurate information about the company much faster than what it was before. So that is one area. Second area where we are seeing an increasingly adoption of AI is around videos or content generation, right? So whether it is video-based or just text-based content, it's not that you can give this work to platform and forget about it, but it gives you a starting point to write more or identifying what are the sections or what are the sections that could be useful for your readers, or a video generation where you could add a few texts and it generates a video. In some of these cases, for example, when you are having customers, users worldwide, multiple languages, then AI can be quite useful there in localizing the video. So if you look at all these two, three different use cases, at the end of the day, these are the activities we are doing on a day-to-day basis. This would help you save 30-40% of your time, your resources, all of that. The other area where, apart from these two, three areas where AI is being increasingly proving to be useful, is on the data analysis, business intelligence side. We are ourselves seeing it with our Zia platform, which is Zoho's AI platform, where before, when you have to collect or connect different databases to get the data or get the insights, now you can use your natural text to prepare a dashboard, for example. And you could do something like Ask Zia. Ask Zia is one of the features where you can just say, our marketeers here, they could just type in text saying, hey, can you give me the impact of Google AdWords spend from the last 10 months? Then the AI would connect the CRM data, your marketing data from Google or from your own automation tool, and presents a mashed up dashboard, which otherwise would have taken at least half an hour to connect the tables, etc. So if we take these repetitive tasks that we are doing today, and today we are at a stage where AI can be applied and you can see immediate boost in productivity when you apply them.
I'm seeing the emergence of various products or vendors creating different media types using AI. The quality of voice generated from AI, the quality of videos generated from AI is obviously improving. What do you think is going to happen in 2025 around that area? And are we going to see more AIs talking to people on the marketing side or on the sales side? What's the next step for those capabilities?
It brings us to the point where we are already seeing things like chatbots. Now, chatbots, just as an example, today, the experience that we're getting out of chatbot may not be the best. There is obviously a lot of marketing. There's a lot of hype around it. But at the end, when you take customer survey, you would see that the experience is not good enough. As the whole agentic platforms start evolving, you would see more application of it coming into the market. When you look at 2025 and forwards, I think what we are seeing right now is last year or rather 2024, 2023, we have seen many of these use cases being tested. Now 2025 and beyond is going to be making it mainstream. I'll give you an example from my own team. We have here, as part of the Europe marketing, we have teams across different European countries. And with the complexity it brings along with language, your culture, and all of that, there are marketing campaigns that needs to be developed for different countries. We've been testing some of these tools and our local teams are amazed by the output we are getting. When I say output, I'm not talking about just English output, right? It's the German or the French output that we are getting. It's obviously at primitive stage. There's a lot of improvements to be done. As the platform gets exposed to better quality data over the period of time, the computational requirement is not going to go higher and higher. That will plateau, but then the quality of output will become a lot finer than it is today. And that's where you would see the productivity graph taking that hockey stick curve, because now you can really leverage the intelligence of the platform.
I'm assuming you're talking about the introduction of colloquialisms, or the translation of colloquialisms is now coming in better and better over time. Because I think if you go back a few years on the translation, if you translate something from English to French, then back to English, it wouldn't be the same. Nowadays, it's pretty much the same unless you introduce colloquialisms. And even now, that's sometimes improving.
Yes, colloquialism. And it's important to make the output sound as natural as we can. Otherwise, we always could make out, okay, this is an AI-generated video. But now things are a lot better. And I think as we expose the data, we will get a much better output than what we have today.
Going back to the technology stack, what are the advantages of having a composable MarTech stack? Because composability is something that's been covered a lot recently. And then how does OHO Solutions fit into that modern MarTech stack?
Composability, if you look at it, what is it? It's just in simple language, it's the ability to combine things. Now, whether it is your off-the-shelf products like your marketing automation or your foundational products, as some call it, a CRM tool or a CDP, etc., or the other apps that you have to develop as part of your marketing process, where you have things like low-code generators, and now we have no-code generating platforms to help you generate simple apps for which you don't necessarily have to buy an off-the-shelf product. The composability has been around for a very long time, but why is it gaining traction in the last couple of years? I would say AI has a huge role to play here, because earlier when you look at composability, the ability to have tech talent within the marketing team has always been a limited opportunity. Obviously, large companies, big organizations, they have the resources. A mid-sized firm, they may not have a MarTech expert within a team. That's where I think the new generation of apps that are now part of marketing stack can help in further leveraging the whole composable architecture within marketing. You have your set of apps that are off the shelf, which are your foundational app, like your CRM, your CDP, your marketing automation, etc. Then you have other set of apps that the teams have always wanted to have, but for some reason they were not able to get to that stage to have those apps because maybe they don't have resources, etc. Now with no-code generators, AI-based app generators, where you can just put a text, it takes the barrier of having tech experts in the team away, because now you can just generate its citizen developers, as they say. This will, one, it will have a lot more control within the team because all the requirements can be fulfilled. Second, it will add more flexibility into the whole stack. As far as OHO is concerned, we have always followed this architecture for a very long time. Our goal is to give that flexibility to the customer. For example, we have about 8 to 9 different marketing solutions out there in the market, whether you are email, your social media, your chatting, what have you. People can always buy these tools as a best of breed solution. You also have an all-in-one package called Marketing Plus, where they want to buy a license bundle. Then we have tools like Zoho Creator or Catalyst or Zoho Flow, where you could then build an app that you want. And then with APIs, you can connect to make a holistic MarTech stack. This is something that we've been having in the market for a few years now. Now with AI as part of almost all of these tools, it's a lot more easier than it what was 2 years ago. A couple of months ago, we showcased AI-based app generator on Zoho Creator. It's primarily targeted to teams where we don't have technical resources. You go to an event, you want to generate a quick app to collect visitor information and connect it with CRM. You can just do it by just prompting a few texts. that's where we are heading.
You mentioned composability allows you to connect all these applications. Do you see that number growing from 14,100, or do you see consolidation happening next year?
It is going to be on both sides, where you have point problem and you need a solution to that with platforms like Zoho Creator or other no-code generators. A lot of these apps would come into the market. It is not an alternate to your foundation systems like CRM or CDP. This number might grow, but at the same time, there is a consolidation that is happening. If you look at the other big players in the industry, almost all of the large software B2B players, they have consolidated their offerings. They all of them have, including Zoho. Zoho has been having a platform or rather unified strategy since last 10 years when we first launched our CRM Plus platform. We see that consolidation at the vendor level happening already. Platforms like your no-code generators will expand the strength of these existing off-the-shelf products.
Will data sovereignty come in?
Yes, for sure. That's a very important topic. Data sovereignty, even for us at Zoho, you see more and more countries coming up with the laws, and that will add to the complexity. But at the same time, I think it's also good to have, right? So more control on the data.
How will that affect you going forward?
We have right now about 14 data centers. Zoho as a company, we operate our own data centers. We are not on hyperscalers. We are expanding our footprint very soon, come up with more data centers in European regions as well. We already have two of them in the union. We'll expand that footprint. So this is something as a business, we know it's coming and we are preparing ourselves for that.
And finally, what does the future look like? Can you give me a prediction for 2025 for marketing tech?
With AI, there is going to be a lot more flexibility within the teams to try new things that were earlier constrained by resource availability or what have you. Teams are more open, or rather they have more options today. The focus on the overall data side of things, it is going to be a lot more because now you can get insights faster than earlier. We are seeing this, you've covered this a bit during our conversation today, is about privacy thing, where we are increasingly seeing more regulations coming in from different countries. This has to have some impact in the way we are doing marketing today, the way we are collecting information, which means the second order effect would be there's a lot of content coming into the market. There's a lot of advertisement there. The first order effect would be, okay, the customers are finding it useful. I think the second order effect would be they'll say that I'll do my own research and I don't have to give my data to someone to follow up and make more money out of me. There are 2-3 trends that saw some sort of emergence this year, which will move towards consolidation. And things like the trend around privacy will get more awareness. So marketeers have to be prepared for this.
Suvish, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Steve, for having me.